back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. We continue our look in conversations about Standing Rock and the resistance of Standing Rock and the thousands of veterans who came in, the decision by the Army Corps of Engineers. Folks are still there. The question is what will happen next and where people are going or not going. We have a lot of folks that we've been in touch with who are up there. We'll be talking to them over the next week as well. On their return, people like Jossie Ross, Jenny Monet, and others who have been there, along with Farai Chidea, our own Baltimore NPR star, has been there for the last few days as well. Maybe people are snowed in with this blizzard and 2 feet of snow. We are now joined by Rebecca Nagel, who is co-director of the No Boundaries Coalition and co-director of FORCE, Upsetting Rape Culture and the Monument Quilt. And she's a citizen, of the Cherokee Nation. Rebecca, good to have you with us again.
Thank you for having me.
Mark Trahan joins us once again, independent print and media journalist and professor at North Dakota, University of North Dakota of Journalism, where he has a special chair, as well as being the past president of the Native American Journalists Association. Mark, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And I think is Waylon there yet? Waylon will be here shortly. Waylon Gray is a council member of the Hickory Ground, Ceremonial Ground, and activist for Native rights from Oklahoma, but he'll be here shortly. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. By email, you can tweet us at Mark Steiner. So, Mark, let me start with you, I appreciate all the time you've taken on our program over this last month or so as we cover all this. It's been the last several months. It's meant a lot for us to have you with us. So where we are now, there are still thousands of people camped out. There's a blizzard taking place. The Army Corps of Engineers said they're going to do an environmental study to see if they're going to shift the route of this pipeline, not to end the pipeline, but shift the route. And we've also seen the influx of maybe a couple of thousand veterans from Korea to Afghanistan and Iraq that showed up, that covered the entire ethnic base of America, really, in many ways. So tell me, where are we now? Where is it now? Where does everything stand?
Well, everything. I actually wrote a piece earlier this week about how at one point this seemed so inevitable, and the tribe just kept at it, saying, you know what, it's not inevitable. And we're now at the point where these other things are starting to surface that show, you know what, there are other routes here. The decision by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to require an environmental impact statement is particularly important because it becomes actionable. So along the way, first they'll do a scope of the project, and once they do that, they'll actually lay out what the environmental impact statement will look like. As they go through that process, all of that is open to lawsuits. And just last week, Dakota Access, the sponsors of it, filed suit to try to speed that process up because they know once it's in EIS form, it really slows everything down. So I think you're looking at least one of the great secrets of the presidency is you don't have as much power as you think you do. And this will be a great example of that.
So you're saying, well, I'm going to come back to that, what that means. Well, let me ask that now, then we'll come back to what it means for where the encampment is, Mark. But so are you saying here that despite Trump becoming president of the United States, words I still have a hard time muttering sometimes, but president of the United States, that the Army Corps engineer study has to continue? We don't know where that's going to end, but the government is stuck with that at the moment. And so is the pipeline company. But don't they have, like, aren't they going to appeal this and fight it?
Oh, they're definitely going to fight it. And they filed a lawsuit to try to preempt it, basically saying that the Army Corps should have stuck with its original decision. But the thing about that is they never got an easement. And it's like going to the loan to the bank and saying, I'm going to build a house on this property over here. I don't have an easement, but I'm going to start anyway. And that's exactly what they did. And now it's kind of coming home to roost. There's still ways that Trump could overturn this, but he's got to go through the agencies, and it will be slow. It won't be something he can just walk into office and say, I'm signing an executive order, and it's over. It's going to be a lot more complicated.
So let me tell another guest here, Rebecca Nagel. Welcome, good to have you with us in this capacity as well. I know you've not been up there, correct?
I've been up there twice.
You have been twice. So tell us, give us your sense of perception of what that struggle has meant to you, going back and forth.
Yeah, so the first time that I was able to make a trip up to the Ochechi Sakhalin camp, it was as part of the Two-Spirit Nation there. So the Two-Spirit is an umbrella term for LGBTQ Native Americans. And we have, just like there are different nations that are camped there representing different tribes, as Two-Spirit people from Turtle Island, we have our own nation and our own camp there. And in mid-October, we were recognized by the leadership of the camp
really?
To have an important role there that goes back to what our role was in our communities prior to colonization. And so, yes, I was honored to be able to be a part of that. There's a really strong Two-Spirit leader, Candy Brings Plenty, who, through her leadership, really helped reestablish the camp and have us be welcomed in that right way through protocol. And so the Two-Spirit Nation is still there. We have a large camp and are, yeah, an important part of what's happening on the ground.
And let me just stay with you for just one moment with that before I turn to Waylon and welcome him to the program. I mean, I think this is important in some ways. I want to come back to this later about the unity that is showed from the Native community throughout and what this has meant, what it may mean for the future in the next year and more. But, you know, there have been a lot of controversies on many Native lands around the Two-Spirit question, especially because churches have such a huge influence in many places, right? So, I mean, I watched that struggle take on different phases and different reses that I've been part of. So what? Talk a bit about that.
So, you know, so even with my nation, Cherokee Nation, my tribe doesn't recognize, you know, what in mainstream society we call gay marriage. And so it is still a struggle within our own communities, especially our communities that have been heavily Christianized, to have that recognition. But in our traditions, and each tribe is different. So
right.
every tribe
right.
has our own language and our own terms and even our own traditional roles. And Two-Spirit was really created in the early 90s by some of our elders because the way that anthropologists were talking about Native American LGBTQ people was through a derogatory term, which actually was like a Prussian word for prostitute. So that was the way that white scholars were talking about us and our history. And so our elders came up with the word Two-Spirit as an umbrella term with the understanding that every tribe has our own unique tradition. And so, yeah, and I think what's happening at the camp and the historic gathering of Native people, you know, it's unlike anything I've ever seen in my entire lifetime, and very inspiring for that reason. And I'm really grateful to the leadership at Standing Rock for taking the stand that we as Native people can join. And part of what's happening there on the ground is this decolonization. And so for us as Two-Spirit people to be recognized is part of that. And it doesn't mean that it's perfect. It doesn't mean that there's not still educating to do in our community, but it is a big stand that we have a role within the circle and our traditional role is valuable. And we're, as a community, not just as a Two-Spirit Nation, but as the whole community, committed to going back to that.
So, Waylon Gray, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us. Connect for us with your work at Standing Rock. You're going back and forth and what you're doing at Hickory Ground and what that is.
I made a five.
Waylon, you there? Can we call him back? Let's just call Waylon back. You got that? Okay. So, Waylon, you there? All right, we're going to call Waylon back, try to get him. So, Mark, let me come back to what I was picking up with Rebecca here. I mean, you know, it seems to me that each stage of the struggle that different Native nations have had in this country, in the confrontation with the American government and more in the battles over the last several hundred years. But since the 1870s, when the reservations were put in place and the wars ended for the most part, each step of the struggle for the last hundred or so years has kind of brought more unity, it seems, to Native nations. Because, you know, we have Americans kind of have this thing about Indians, but no, it's not Indians. There are many Native nations. But something about these struggles have brought people together. To talk a bit about your kind of view of that.
Oh, that's absolutely true. And it's just been...
Let me go to Mark Trahan. We'll come right back. Mark, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I think that's been just the inspiring nature of the whole thing. is the way this has brought people together in real time across social media. And then people who are so touched by that that they pick up and actually go there and experience it firsthand. I think this is kind of the opening salvo in a much longer confrontation. I expect in the next few months we'll be talking about the First Nations in Canada with the Kinder Morgan pipeline in very much the same context that we now talk about Standing Rock.
Because, I mean, and you've seen it, I think, you know, through the growth of things from whether it's the powwow scene or the Native American church and other, and then came, there was Wounded Knee, and before that we had Alcatraz, now we have this mass movement that's taken place. I mean, this is significant in terms of a social political shift, I think.
Absolutely, and there's nothing like it. I mean, I was covering a many of those stories you mentioned, and this one has just deeper roots across the board.
So, I'm sorry, Waylon, you there? We just lost Waylon again. Can somebody try to get him back? And we'll go right to Waylon as soon as we get him back. So one of the things we've seen in the news is that what's happening in Standing Rock right now with this pipeline being stopped. I mean, there's a larger question here of the environmental issues involved, as well as the kind of issues around the native world. And I'm just curious what you think is where this is, what takes place now. And Waylon, you back with us?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm sorry, brother. We got you. So let me take a step backwards. Waylon Gray is back with us. So talk a bit about, before we get into the question I just asked, the relationship between what you did in Standing Rock and what Hickory Ground is for our listeners.
Well, it's the same thing. You know, we're fighting for sacred lands, burial grounds, but more than that, you know, native rights. You know, what we're doing at Hickory Ground, you know, is where another tribe has, you know, desecrated our sacred land and burial grounds. And the only difference is Standing Rock, you know, it's the U.S. government. But to me, you know, Standing Rock is way bigger than just the pipeline, the Black Snake. And personally, I respect and I love the Black Snake. You know, as much as they want to kill the Black Snake, I respect it and I love it. It has brought our people together. It has made us see who we are and how powerful we can be as one. You know, we have been underneath the United States government's rule for so long that we have been brainwashed that what they have become for us is, we pledge allegiance to their flag, which is the same thing as if ISIS came tomorrow and killed 80% of our people, took the other 20 and put them in the desert. Would we expect our grandchildren to salute the ISIS flag and to pledge allegiance to it and to be proud to call themselves ISIS? No. But our people have become Americans, and we salute the same flag that was flown over our people when they were massacred by hundreds of millions. So it's a brainwashing system, but I hope that this wakes our people up to understand that we are not on the same team. We might have the same jerseys on, whatever you want to call it, but we are playing their game by their rule, under their rule, their scoreboard, their keeping score. At the end of the game, they make the rules who wins or loses. We might win little ones here and there, but it's the ones that they give us to win. But they are divide and conquer, and they're very good at it over 500 years. But until our people come together like we are right now, as one, we will not win any battle. If we win one, they gave it to us. And they're very good at divide and conquer. So I hope this wakes our people up, the Native Americans, that we have to come together as one, our own nation, not as Americans. Because you cannot name us like dogs. We are not Americans. We are Muscogee Creeks. We are Choctaws, Chickasaws, Creeks, Muscogee Creeks, Seminoles, or whatever, many, many tribes. But when we become Americans, then we are under their rule.
So let me, Mark, you want to pick up on that theme?
Well, it's always complicated. I think, to me, the issue is this idea that we're in a moment in history where the future of the world requires us to do things differently. And people who have a 10,000-year history have a different way of looking at the world. They've gone through droughts, gone through other things. And when it comes to figuring out how climate change impacts us all, I would listen to people who have a 10,000-year history. In that region for Cannonball, for example, and when Ben Franklin was alive, the villages along Cannonball were larger than all of the cities in New England, larger than New York City. And they had to pick up and move at several points because of changing environment. And so there's a long history that can help prepare us through this really tough challenge ahead for climate change. Starting with how do we get rid of fossil fuels and how do we make the transition away to renewable energy? And part of that is being said right here in North Dakota, where it's, we can't do this old way anymore. You know, one of the funny thing about treaties and one of the larger issues is the great narrative is that the United States breaks all its treaties and has always done so. And certainly there's an argument to make there, but at the same time, and this is what makes it so complicated, the United States every once in a while lives up to it. I was part of the whole salmon rights dispute in the Northwest and writing about that. When I was a kid, my dad would say, we're going to get arrested today. And yet the Supreme Court looked at that and said, boy, the law says what it says, and tribes have a right to salmon. And because of that decision, salmon exists in the Northwest because tribes and states work together and co-manage a very scarce natural resource. I think that metaphor is exactly the same for climate change, that it's going to take everybody working together to try to figure out where we go from here.
So, and Rebecca, one of the things that I was reading this morning is that Robert F. Kennedy said this morning that, or wrote an article yesterday, that this, what happened at Standing Rock is a seminal change in what happens in the environmental movement in the fight to change our world from fossil fuels, and that this change, this is a game changer. Do you agree with that?
I agree, and I think that when we talk about the significance of Standing Rock, I think we always need to talk about it being about indigenous sovereignty first. I think it is about protecting the environment and protecting Grandmother Earth. And I think that it's really important for us to always foreground tribal sovereignty in what we're talking about. So, you know, as a sovereign Native nation, the Standing Rock Sioux tribe has the right to say, you know, have influence over things that affect the health and the well-being of its citizens, just like any sovereign nation does. And also, going back to treaty rights, those rights also extend to the Great Sioux Nation or the Ocheti Sakhalin, because the pipeline is going through the treaty lands of Fort Laramie. And so when we talk about the seminal change and what this moment really means in the United States, I think it's really important for us to recognize that while there are these moments of the United States recognizing tribal sovereignty, what federal Indian law has done really since the like 1820s and 1830s is chip away at the sovereignty of our tribes. And so restoring sovereignty, which is our inherent right, because our Native nations actually, our existence predates the existence of the United States. So it's not rights that we're asking the United States to give us as citizens of sovereign nations, but it's actually rights that we have inherently that we're asking the United States to really just recognize. And so it is a moment where, you know, people stood up for tribal sovereignty and the federal government heard us. And I think that that's what's so powerful. Because even when we look back at, you know, a lot of actions that people are comparing this to in the 70s, for me, what I think about as a significance is that while it was Native people coming together, it wasn't our nations coming together the way that people have with Standing Rock, that over, you know, 300 Native nations have come to support Standing Rock. We haven't had unity like this in Indian country in a really long time, and I think that that's really important.
So taking this one step further a bit here, what is happening now with Standing Rock and this pipeline, there are two separate things I've seen. On one hand, you've got this issue of sovereignty and Native nations and the law and people standing up to defend land that belongs to them or should belong to them. And B, you've got the environmental question, which is tied in of this pipeline, which, you know, is 90% complete. So the pipeline's not going to stop. They're going to figure out how to get this pipeline done. So how does that kind of fit into the struggle that we're seeing now, knowing that this pipeline is not going to stop? It's going to go somewhere. It's just that the Bismarck and most white folks in Bismarck said, we don't want it here, so they moved it over to native land, but it's still going to go someplace.
And I think that where the connection is between, you know, indigenous rights and the environment is that as indigenous people, we're the frontline communities. And so, you know, even though Native Nations only control 2% of land in the United States, 20% of oil resources are on that land. So North Dakota already produces more oil than any other state, and the overwhelming majority of that extraction is happening on tribal lands. There are 35 companies extracting oil on tribal lands in North Dakota before this pipeline started getting built. And so, I think the challenge of the environmental movement is seeing environmental racism and how that impacts indigenous communities, and seeing that we can't fight for the environment without also fighting for indigenous rights.
So let me get Waylon and then Code, but Mark, before we have to go somewhere else to comment on the same thing, Waylon Gray, then Mark Trahant.
So what are you asking me now?
What I just asked about. That we have the fight for the native, for the sovereign nations in native issues, but there's also the pipeline, which is not going to stop.
Well, you know, I'll tell you this. You know, what was great about being up there is the fact that you know, all races are coming together to protect the Mother Earth, and the Mother Earth, you know, we're not only Mother Earth. Mother Earth owns us, and it's great that you know, we all come together like that. And If win or lose, you know, our people have been put in many atrocities. If you look at Pine Ridge, the life expectancy rate is 45 years old. 80% black mold-infested homes. 60% don't have electricity or running water. This is the treatment from America to our people. If it happened anywhere else in this country, you would see Obama or whoever on news talking about we got to stop this of what their treatment of our people. So I hope that this we use this in more than just the pipeline. The Standing Rock, I hope that they use this to spread light on the way America treats the indigenous people of this country. There's over 300 reservations, over 700,000 people on reservations, with three times higher teen suicide rate, 80% black mold-infested homes, 60% no electricity or running water, polluted water, 1 in 3 babies death rate. We go on and on with diseases, hypothermia, on and on and on of the way the health care, all the treaties that they never, ever, ever, never, ever stood for. They have denied every treaty. So I hope that we can bring to light with this cause the way America treats the indigenous people of this country. And it's very ashamed of America, where they treat them. And hopefully we can go beyond just the pipeline. This is not just about the black snake. It's way beyond that, the way America treats the indigenous people, with the preservation, the reservations, the prison camps that they created when they took our land. They put them on these reservations, and they're still there. 45-year-old is the life expectancy, the second lowest in the Western Hemisphere, second lowest next to Haiti. And that's what we need to focus on, the teen suicides. Last year on Pine Ridge, over 20 in 4 months, 100 attempts of teen suicides because of the life that America has allowed to take place on these reservations.
So
it's a very shame that America does this. And hopefully this will spread light on just bigger than the pipeline. The pipeline, I respect the black snake. I love the black snake. It's brought people together. And hopefully we can shine a light on how America really is. It is not the American dream, it is the Native nightmare.
So
I would like to challenge the congressmen, the presidents of this United States, to go live one night, 1 week, in their homes on Pine Ridge, in the 80% black mold-infested homes, with their children. They will not do it.
And
it was way beyond this pipeline.
Okay, I'm sorry, Waylon, we're almost out of time, and I wanted to get Mark to get a word in here, too, before the end of the hour. Just about this dichotomy between the pipeline and the two battles taking place, and this pipeline is going to take place. So what does that take us?
I actually would challenge the premise. I don't think the pipeline is necessarily a done deal.
Okay, all
and
right.
Here's why. One of the things that's happening is market forces are taking effect, and oil production on the Bakken has been in decline, and this year it's expected to go under 900,000 barrels a year, and that is a day, rather, and that's just the capacity of the pipeline is 500,000. Already it's being handled by rail car, and so a lot of these shippers are going to start to wonder if they really need to have that capacity. We see today Google announcing that they're going to be 100% renewable fuel. Millennials are driving less than their parents did. All these forces with the market are starting to say, do we really need to have the capacity for oil that we've had? And even though they've sunk $3.5 billion into it, I could still see this project being one that never gets completed.
So where do we all think this, we only have a couple minutes left here, just where does this go now? Does the camp disperse? Does the camp stay?
The camp, the leadership of the camp is talking about staying right now. When I was up there a couple weeks ago, I think what I heard on the ground was that people are staying until DAPL removes the construction equipment. So even though this is a really huge victory, the fight is by no means over, and so people are preparing for the long haul.
What I see is that they have made this call for the Army Corps to deny the easement and for everybody to go home is what they hope. And then Trump comes in and fixes everything because we all know he has money involved in it. There's $1 million invested and got $500,000 donation from the CEO of the company. But nobody's going nowhere. I mean, it's gonna go on and on, and it's just going to be a fight that we have to keep up.
Mark, where do you see it going?
Well, I think the battle shifts to the courtrooms, and it's going to be a very complicated legal battle and one the tribe is really ready to go with. I also think we're going to start talking a lot more about Kinder Morgan in Canada, and I think a lot of the energy that's now on the front lines, particularly with Standing Rock, will start to be in that battle because that's fresh.
Well, we're going to keep on this and keep talking to folks and keep this alive here on our program because this continues. This is one of the most important moments, I think, in modern American history, what happened to Standing Rock. You just heard the voice just then of Mark Trahant. Mark Trahant is independent journalist, faculty member at the University of North Dakota, where he's the Charles R. Johnson Endowed Professor of Journalism. You can follow his work on TrahantReports.com. He's a member of the Shoshone Bannock Nation. Rebecca Nagel is co-director of No Boundaries Coalition, co-director of Force, Upsetting Rape Culture, and the Monument Quilk, and is a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. Waylon Graves is council member of Hickory Ground, Ceremonial Ground, and activist for Native rights in this country, and a member of the Creek Nation. So Waylon, Rebecca, Mark, thank you all three so much for taking your time again today. Look forward to having you all back very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to take a short break, and when we take this short break, we're going to come back and look at this new curriculum out there called Trump 2.0. What does it mean? Stay with us. We'll find out when we come back.